I'm Blue Mediette.
And I'm Finn Holly Blue.
And this is the Grant Magazine Podcast. It was on my commute home. I got off the bus. It was cold, raining, wind was blowing. I started to walk up the hill through the slush, and when I reached a tree, water had been dribbling off the branches all day. As I looked down, my heart started to race, because in the snow, there were hundreds and hundreds of tiny holes.
Wait, holes?
Yeah, they were everywhere on the ground, almost every inch of the snow.
But why were you afraid?
I have trypophobia, the fear of holes.
It's just really uncomfortable. It like makes me sort of clench up and makes it hard to breathe.
Moving through your day, you may encounter an array of things that make you uncomfortable. The packed elevator ride on your morning commute, a person chewing gum just loud enough for you to hear it, or looking down on the city streets from a tall building. But for some, a simple fear can grow into something much more odd. Today, we're going to talk about the little things in life that make your hair stand up and your stomach clench, the phobias that many people go a lifetime without understanding. From stickers to small holes, we'll break down the psychology behind why we have these phobias and confront the very fear we seek to avoid. Oh my god, I cannot look at it.
We treat the whole spectrum of anxiety disorders, include phobias, generalized anxiety, panic disorder, agoraphobia, you name it. If it's anxiety, we probably treat it.
Oh, this is Dr.
Jason Guy Richards, and I'm an anxiety specialist.
Dr. Richards helps people get over their phobias, and he's going to help me understand what exactly a phobia is.
Anxiety disorders kind of function off of two mechanisms, and they are escape and avoidance behaviors. Now, what I mean by that is somebody may have an uncomfortable experience with something, let's say bees, for example, and as a result of that, they cognitively drum up a lot of kind of catastrophic thinking about the bees, on top of having a bit of a panic attack at the same time of being exposed to the bee. Now, through the process of avoiding coming into contact with bees after that because of how unpleasant it was, their system, specifically the amygdala, learns, or I guess relearns, because bees are a natural phobia, relearns that they're indeed dangerous and to be avoided in order for the person to survive.
Most of the phobias we have are naturally occurring, meaning they have been coded into our brains through eons of evolution. Ancestors falling from trees, getting stuck in caves, or dying from snake bites have taught us to be afraid of things that can hurt us. But in today's world, our brains can get a little carried away with it.
You know, I've had to cope with it because, I mean, I do have to peel stickers off of fruit. I just hate it.
That was Jessica Murray, the activities director here at Grant High School.
What is the phobia that you have?
It is pitakianophobia. It is a fear of stickers.
When did you first notice that you had this phobia?
I honestly don't even know. Something I've always sort of felt. And I've never liked stickers or labels on fruit that you have to peel off. I hate those. Or things like coming up.
Really?
Yeah, always. Like, I remember even as a kid, I was not a kid who was into stickers. And the worst, by far, are stickers or tape on skin.
For Miss Murray, the fear of stickers is real. She says her heart starts to race and her mind goes into a frenzy when she sees them.
Like when people put stickers on their face, I can't handle that. Or when we go through the grocery store line and they always want to give a sticker to my son, you know? And he's like, great! And he like puts it on and it's peeling off. Or
you're done then.
I have a really hard time.
But stickers aren't putting anybody in harm's way. It doesn't add up like snakes or heights. There is no danger present, but they're still calling this extreme discomfort. Why?
She probably has kind of a tactile sensory aversion to things like stickers. She probably doesn't put them on her own skin either. Since she had an uncomfortable experience, or is having uncomfortable experiences with things on her skin, she sees it on somebody else's skin. She gets that that same kind of discomfort. Now, discomfort can be read as danger as far as the body's concerned. So nausea, vomiting, tactile sensory things, sticky stuff on the skin can be a sign of a toxin being on you. And so she has this experience, and then through that process I talked about earlier, kind of escape and avoidance, in other words, she sees a sticker on somebody's skin, it gives her that icky feeling, and then she looks away from it, thus breaking contact with the stimuli that's causing the aversive sensation. The system reads that the same way as it reads a bee in the room and you run from it. Can't really tell the difference. If you react to it in a way that would indicate that it's dangerous, icky, or uncomfortable, the system then codes for that to be kind of similar to a phobia.
So we are responsible for our unreasonable fears. I guess that makes sense. Miss Murray is not alone. I recently put up a Facebook post asking others to share their phobias with me. I wasn't sure what I'd get back, but I definitely didn't expect...
cotton balls, bones, the ocean, crows, veins, throwing up, bugs...
wind turbines, sunken ships, waves, thunderstorms, seaweed, elevators, medieval art.
From, like, especially, like, Byzantine art and, like, a lot of religious art, just how it looks really bothers me and makes my skin crawl and I can't look at it.
Medieval art?
I'm Izzy Valle and my phobia is medieval art.
Izzy is a senior at Grant. Can you maybe give me a little bit more context to that?
I was thinking about this earlier and I think... the reason why is because my mom had this, like, box that she used for art, and it had a picture of, like, Jesus on it. And I don't know, I was really young. I think I was about maybe 8 or 9 years old, and, like, the eyes really just got to me, and it was really creeping me out, and I would just imagine it, like, staring at me through, like, from wherever it was. So one night, while she was asleep, I took a green marker and a green crayon and scratched the face out because it creeped me out so much. And my mom yelled at me a lot about it. She was very mad. And I think that's where it stemmed from.
At first, a phobia of medieval art made no sense to me. I honestly thought it was a joke. But after talking to Izzy, I started to understand. When she was a child, the creepy painting on her mother's art box shaped her view of all art that resembled that painting. And her mother's anger even further instilled that as a negative memory. So every time she saw something that reminded her of that painting, she looked away, each time re-emphasizing that fear response. In essence, almost anything can act like a phobia if it is associated with a negative feeling, even a line on a piece of paper.
Another kind of off example would be a squiggly line being a conditioned phobic response because it looks an awful lot like a snake. Now, there's a lot of research around the naturally occurring phobias in snakes, and the fact that we can produce a phobic response to a squiggly line given the right situation in a scientific research project seems to indicate that it's closely related enough to the shape of a snake to cause the phobic response. And then through learning and escape and avoidance behavior, squiggly line, moth, what have you, becomes a phobic stimuli.
I gotta say, hearing his explanation made me more comfortable with facing my own fear of holes. It's ridiculous, but could there be a deeper meaning to it?
Holes makes a little bit of sense to me, even on a primal level, because the things that tend to come out of holes, be they in the ground or somebody's skin, are typically parasites or stinging insects, serpents, snakes, etc. Most of the stuff that crawls out of the ground to us is a little bit aversive. So it kind of makes some sense on a lot of levels.
Seems like almost any fear can be traced back to some evolutionary symptom or a traumatic childhood event, but to get over them, you're going to have to deal with it head on.
So if you can spend enough time to habituate to the stimuli is what we call it. It's basically you're in its presence, it's making you anxious, and then your system starts to pick up on the fact that those holes aren't really full of bees or wasps or serpents, and it starts to shut down naturally because it's like, well, nothing's happening here. If you do that long enough and you get to the point where you're not feeling anxious or uncomfortable, or at least not very anxious or uncomfortable, you've had what we call a successful exposure session. If you do that repetitiously over time, you should get over, based on the mechanisms of anxiety as we understand them, get better.
So should we try this?
But I've never looked at holes for more than maybe 5 seconds.
I cannot do it. I don't think I'm ready to look at it.
So we're going to do it.
Let's try 2 seconds.
2 seconds.
Count it out.
Oh, no. I think this is quicker the way Dr. Richard does it. It says it usually takes 6 sessions to work up to the final.
We've done this in 5 minutes. We've done this
in 5 minutes. This is not a responsible way to get over my phobia. What if it makes me worse? After Fitton had shown me a series of pictures of small, clustered holes, one of them being the inside of a lotus flower, I took another minute, waiting, nervous, my palms sweating, for the final photo. A picture of a person holding out their hands, covered in dark, oddly shaped holes. For me, terror in its realest form. Should I do it quick? 1, 2. That's all I can do right now.
Well, are you cured?
No. I'm not cured. This is going to take a long time. I tried showing the picture to Finn. I wanted to see how he would react.
Okay, I have it up right now.
You're looking at it?
I'm looking at it.
Oh, okay. So, it's weird.
It's weird, it's gross, but I can handle it.
Although my first attempt at exposure therapy ended poorly, I still have hope. Dr. Richard says he recovered from one of his own fears in a similar way.
We had a really bad experience in a haunted house. I was overwhelmed with fear because, one, I knew the person who was playing the role as a chainsaw murderer, and it was somebody who was much older than me and had bullied me. So here I am coming out of this small tunnel, and there's that guy, and he's got a chainsaw, and there's strobe lights going off, and they've been spraying you with fake blood. And so I got overwhelmed, and I didn't want to go forward. And so my friends kind of had to push me through, you know, kind of that dude thing. I was like, ah, come on, dude, go, go, go. So I went, and I realized that I really didn't like feeling that way. At the core, it bothered me that it generated hesitation.
But everyone's afraid of haunted houses. That's what they're made for.
That's true, but the way he handled that fear is what sets it apart.
What I started doing from that point on is going to every haunted house within a drivable distance. I would hit upwards of 13, 14 a year, a season, and I continued to do that up until maybe 2 years ago. So we're talking about from around age 15, about when I got my driver's license, until age 41, 42, I was still doing that.
He turned his fear into a passion. And I mean passion. Dr. Richards knows everything you can know about haunted houses.
How did they do the props? How were the costumes? You know, what did they use for the fake blood? Is it the standard issue stuff that they put in the B-grade movies, or did they go a level higher and get something that looks real?
Izzy hopes that she can do the same with her own fear. Do you go to art museums still?
Yeah, I do. I try not to let it dictate my life because it's such an irrational fear, and I'm very intent on like getting over it because I know how dumb it is, and I do believe that it's beautiful, and like they probably took a lot of work obviously to do it. I have to conquer it, and everyone tells me that it's stupid, so to end the ridicule, I think I just have to force myself to look at it. So sometimes when I'm in the mood, I just like look it up and just like keep looking at it to see if I can get over it.
And Izzy says getting over her phobia is more than just a way to prove her friends wrong. It's a necessity for her future aspirations.
Art history is like one of my like biggest interests in terms of like academics. Like I love learning about artists in different time periods and different genres, especially how they reflect like what's happening when that artist was alive and like where it comes from historically, culturally.
So do you think maybe if you get over this phobia, you might end up loving medieval art?
Yeah, I certainly hope so, because like I'm trying to appreciate it, and I really hope so, because it's a really big era in history that's kind of hard to ignore. So hopefully when I get over it, I get to appreciate all aspects of art history.
And according to Dr. Richards, Izzy would not be in the rarity if that happened. He points to the fact that excitement and fear are often switched once you get over the initial shock. This can frequently turn someone's phobia into a fascination. So then do you ever see, like, I guess, kind of what happened to you, where you had this phobia and then you turned it into kind of this obsession, this like, you know, love for haunted houses. Mm-hmm. Do you see phobias sometimes flip on their head and become, you know, major interests for these people?
We do, yeah. Relatively frequently, not in every case, but frequently enough for it to be interesting. People with fear of heights, maybe they eventually end up skydiving, and maybe they really, really like that, so they keep doing it. been people who have volunteered at places like the Humane Society to get over fears of dogs or other animals, ended up continuing to volunteer there because they really find it to be rewarding and exciting to work with those animals. Through that process, they may begin to be excited by it versus afraid of it. Now, those two responses physiologically are almost identical, fear versus excitement. It's the perception of it that changes over time.
So we create most of our fears, we perpetuate them, and we control them. It may seem trivial to worry about some benign fear, but those same laws apply to all of our fears and struggles. Asking out the person of your dreams, meeting new people, taking up a new career, speaking up for yourself. All of these things could be hiding under a veil of discomfort and anxiety that you've created for yourself, and we can't hide from them forever. It'll only make it worse. I don't know if I'll ever learn to love small holes, but I know that when I'm afraid of something, I'm not going to run away. I'm going to face it head on, and I hope you can do the same. Is it true? You've been feeling sort of low.